And we have in studio, as promised, Lucy Wolf. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
And we're just, she was just saying she has two, and you have four.
I do.
It's 15, 13.
10 and 7.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it's cloud management.
Yeah, it really is. So as always, and we're just saying, whenever you put out a call for help, now I've, even this morning since I've been on air, many, many more emails coming in. Loads came in last night. Lots on text as well. And you are the sleep expert, the baby whisperer, sleepmatters.ie. Tell us a bit about just you first, and then we'll get to our questions.
So I suppose my own background originally was not sleep orientated until I became a sleep deprived parent myself, and I had a calling from the land of sleep deprivation, and there was no resources here for parents struggling with sleep. And you can see that you send out a message this morning, you're inundated, and there just wasn't that level of support. So I decided that I would be the person I felt that I needed. So okay. I retrained and put myself out there in this capacity. And as a result, you know, it's a business that has grown from strength to strength.
Absolutely.
And then this last year, with the introduction of my book as well, that has really helped to extend the resource in areas that I never would have gotten to as one person on my own.
Absolutely. So it's actually called...
It's the baby sleep solution.
The baby sleep solution.
I mean, it covers from birth to 6 years of age.
Right, okay.
Because I really acknowledge that I don't feel sleep problems begin or end.
And they can start at four.
At any stage,
three.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that's great that parents have that, an Irish voice.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I know you're definitely the go-to woman, the baby whisperer, sleepmatters.ie. Now, loads and loads coming through. There's one from Lorraine, who is a 19-month-old, and their little one gets up at 5:30 every day, even though they have a long nap between 12 and 2. Lucy has an 8-month-old and they wake at 5, even though they have two long naps during the day. And Deirdre has an 8-month-old as well, and he has a 3-hour nap, or never sleeps, sorry, longer than 3 hours, and is up very early in the morning. So early risers, it's kind of the theme.
It is, and early rising is a really difficult problem. It's a really big challenge for families, and I suppose just to put it in context, we consider anything before 6 a.m.
early
to be early rising, okay. And anything after 6 would be considered a typical wake time.
Okay.
Now, to put that in context, we'd also anticipate your child would have maybe routinely slept quite well in that overnight period. Nothing unrealistic, so some children will always need brief reassurance from the parent and obviously feeds when age appropriate. But waking at 5. Now, if we kind of discuss what causes most sleep difficulties, that will help then people get a better understanding. So the first reason behind most sleep difficulties is a level of dependency. So if children are drinking a bottle, nursing, being held, rocked, danced, bounced to get to sleep.
We got one in about dancing your kids to sleep.
So if you have any level of input when you're helping your child go to sleep, you're always going to be more vulnerable to a level of activity overnight and early rising.
Okay.
So that is often then overlapped by the other part of sleep problems, which is timekeeping orientated.
Right.
So biological timekeeping. Now, for me as a practitioner, I put huge emphasis on the biological timekeeping because I kind of feel we all know about the dependency element.
But is the biological something we can do anything about?
Yeah, it is. You can tap into it. You can underpin it yourself by, like, we're all designed more or less the same way, the circadian rhythm, it marches on regardless of what you do. So let's say a lot of the work that I do with families is helping them hijack their time clock for an age appropriate child.
Right.
And so with early rising, most parents are pushing out bedtime because the natural reaction is if you want your child to sleep longer,
put them to bed later.
But actually the reverse is true.
Okay.
And not only is an earlier bedtime often needed, but there also is a massive relationship between where the daytime sleep ends and its relationship to bedtime.
So nap time ideally should be...
Well, it's about closing gaps, actually.
Okay.
And again, the gaps are very distinctive per age group. So just in general, I would normally propose that between 4 and 8 months, the biggest gap of wakefulness between the final nap and bedtime shouldn't really exceed more than 2 to 2.5 hours.
Okay.
So this often means your final nap finishing at 5 to be in bed comfortably between 7 and 7:30.
Okay.
Now, the age groups that you've mentioned there, so between 8 and, let's say, 18 months, the gap of wake time is actually only 4 hours.
Right, okay.
Which means that you're looking for your end nap to finish around 3:30 p.m. again to be comfortably asleep between 7 and 7:30.
That does make sense.
Yeah, right.
I wish I'd known this 7 years ago.
And again, it's the science of sleep, right? And so then the biggest wake period ever is from 18 months onwards, and that's only 5 hours. And that 5 hour window is reserved for really well rested children. So not necessarily the ones that are waking or waking early.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all about closing up the gaps.
Okay.
And as I close up the gap, I then weaken whatever dependency might exist. night.
Right, okay.
And, you know, the typical dependencies are, let's say, maybe drinking a bottle,
yeah.
holding a hand, being rocked.
Being on body, yeah.
Being nursed, etc. And so when your baby is over 6 months plus, if you feel that you're looking to work intensely on your sleep, and a lot of families would feel that they need to maybe cry it out to, you know.
How do you feel about that?
I don't feel good about it at all. I wouldn't be an advocate at all about any cry intensive or cry it out techniques. But I would endorse, let's say, my stay and support approach, because it does exactly what is described, that it allows a parent to help your child transition from maybe what you have been doing, but with entire support from the parent. Okay. So I'd consider it to be, let's say, you know, child-centred and parent-led and entirely supported. And then as you help them physically, emotionally...
What did you call that method again? Your method?
Stay and support
approach. So that's in the room with them until they actually fall asleep?
Absolutely. And using loads of physical contact, verbal contact. I use loads of distraction, because very often if you can work through the difficulties and close up all those little gaps, then the cry is only a protest cry.
Yeah.
So it's not intense in the first instance. It's kind of like a level of confusion, some frustration. I always use pick up to calm. But distraction is brilliant, because it kind of stops them in their tracks.
Okay.
It just helps you manage that little cycle. And
give us
upset.
One example of a distraction then.
Oh, I might blow in their face.
Oh, yeah.
I might bang on the bar of the cot with my, you know, with your ring.
Yeah.
I might use white noise in an app on your phone, turn it really loudly.
Okay.
And I might clip my fingers or clap my hands.
Something.
And it just kind of momentarily stops them. And when it momentarily stops them, you then can support them with more touch, because they can focus on the touch.
Okay.
Very often the crying spikes up again, but now you're managing it. So
right.
I would almost describe it almost as like a hierarchy of soothing.
Okay.
And you work through that with your baby. And if you are applying all of the parameters with huge emphasis on the time element, mm-hmm. then the crying is really short. It doesn't happen for many days.
Is it like, no matter which way you put it, it's so distressing for parent and for baby to have that happen as well.
Oh, it really is. Absolutely. And we try to avoid it however we possibly can, but we also acknowledge that you might have to help your child experience some level of distress with your support.
Of course, yeah. So Lucy, another one that's coming quite a bit is co-sleeping as well.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
I feel great about co-sleeping.
Okay.
And as a parent myself, we have co-slept and breastfed, and I think that it's a very individual decision.
Okay.
For a family to make. The challenges arise when the bed sharing is reactive bed sharing.
Okay.
So parents have brought them into the child into the bed not as a last resort, but let's say they weren't planning necessarily to bed share, but they've brought the baby into the bed to try and get some more sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then what is often reported is that still nobody is sleeping.
Yeah, of course.
So again, first of all, it's an in-house decision.
Yeah.
And I support parents, whatever decisions they make, and I try to always have a very balanced view for parents, just to help them find, you know, what is your parenting style?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you'll find that I found my own children, my parenting style changed per child.
Per child, yeah.
Plus my resistance maybe got lower and lower as time went on. But, you know, you do, every child has a different parent, they say.
Yeah.
And I think that's very true. And I think that as long as everybody feels like they're getting the optimum amounts of rest, whatever decision you make is the right one for you.
Yeah. I mean, I actually personally felt that when she was 6 months old and we were thinking about moving her, I was just, she's so tiny. I'm like, I don't want to sleep by myself. Why would a 6 month old baby
Absolutely.
Want to sleep by themselves?
Absolutely. And then so, I suppose the only thing
individual.
Is that then parents come and I ask them, you know, what are you looking for?
Yes.
And then a lot of the times it would be, I would like them to sleep in their own cot or bed in their own room.
Mm.
You know, we have another baby on the way, or we have three
we have
other children. Yes. Or we, yes. Well, there is that, or, you know, but I suppose it's just deciding on, you know, what do you want? And very often people come to me almost with a list.
Yeah.
And that list changes as well, because we work through things. They might say, well, actually, I really miss them and I want them to sleep with us. And so we curate it to make that happen.
There's just so many issues. Grania got in touch and said she has 7-month-old twin boys, and one has never slept through the night ever, and obviously is waking up the other one, and they refuse to nap in their cot, and the only way they can get them to nap is the bush chair.
Sure. So very often when we see a resistance to sleep by day, it's actually related to what's happening in the evening time at bedtime.
Okay.
So again, if they don't have an independent skill set at bedtime, then it's often very hard to get them to sleep in the cot by day. So actually focus at bedtime first of all to see, can they become more independent? The biggest issues with, let's say, with twins, as I see it in my practice, would be that there's this, what I call a partial dependency.
Yeah.
Well, so you've not got enough hands to rock and roll them all of the way to sleep, but what you might be doing is a final feed a little bit too close to sleep time.
Okay.
So this doesn't mean that they'd be completely asleep going into the cot, but that the the drink is the last thing that you do.
Okay.
So there's not enough clearance time. So the drink maybe, it could be breast or bottle. It happens maybe 30 minutes before sleep time. Your child goes to sleep with really relative ease and then they continue to wake throughout the course of the night and refuse to nap by day. And what we really want to do is maybe move the feed slightly further out of the context of sleep.
Okay.
So that this drink is putting the, it's, I call it enabling the sleepy state.
Okay.
And thus far then disabling everything else. So we just move the feed maybe an hour before sleep time.
And this is with twins, but also with kids sharing a room. Like, it is tricky if one is a good sleeper and one isn't, because
really
the other one could kind of wake them.
Yeah. So I generally treat twins slightly differently to siblings. So first of all, I always take the twins as a unit. And if the parents want them to share a room, we work on it on that basis. We try to develop one bedtime routine, one parent.
Yeah.
And so that they can distribute the twins into their respective cots or beds, and they can be able to do that in a, you know, future-proofing their sleep, and that they can help them learn together. And twins have an amazing capability to sleep within each other's space. They don't tend to wake them once they are very good sleepers, and I know you're a twin.
I slept well, she didn't, according to her, but anyway.
Right. Yeah, but you see, the thing is, there is often this dynamic that one twin does sleep well and one twin doesn't, which is a bit like what this family is, are observing, and that generally is to do with the timekeeping.
And then what about kids sharing a room? We're running out of time, Lucy.
The room sharing, I generally find that it's not a great idea to room share until both kids are really great sleepers. So what I often do is I remove the good sleeper, maybe even have them share the room with the parent for a while, fix, if you like, the child that's not sleeping great, and then when that child is sleeping great, I reintroduce the other child so that we have two robust sleepers, and you're not panicking hooking one child out to try and preserve the sleep of the other.
Right, okay. And the final one is, I have a baby 10 month old girl and she takes two good naps during the day, about 90 minutes each, finishing at 3:15, and she goes down at 7:38, and she's a good night's sleeper until very recently. So is this that going back to spacing it out?
It does indeed, and I suppose it just, I just close up that gap a little bit more, because she is obviously a really good sleeper. She just needs to be fine-tuned, as I would call it, and I would just bring forward bedtime slightly so that I'd be aiming to be in bed asleep for around 7.
Okay.
So that would just mean maybe going into the cot around 10 to 7.
Is it a thing, do you honestly believe that all people can be trained to sleep well?
I believe that everybody's sleep can be improved. I try not to use words like training, because I feel that you're inherently a good sleeper already.
Yeah.
You're designed to sleep, but what you might need to be is being programmed a little bit more correctly.
Okay.
But absolutely, I do. I feel that unless there's an underlying medical issue, that all sleep can look better. And even with a medical issue, sleep can always look a little bit better with small adjustments often.
Okay. Give us all your contact details again.
Okay, so my website is sleepmatters.ie. My book is The Baby Sleep Solution. And you can also join me on my Facebook page, which is really busy as well, which is Sleep Matters with Lucy Wolfe.
Very busy. Will you come back in?
I would love to, anytime.
Yeah. Thank you very much.